Welcome to Frame of Reference, informed, intelligent conversations about the issues and challenges facing everyone in today's world. In-depth interviews with Sauk County's leaders and professionals to help you expand and inform your frame of reference. Brought to you by the Max FM Digital Network. Now here's your host, Raoul Labrèche.
Well, welcome to another edition of Frame of Reference. We started last week with an interview with Jamie Safasivam and Alex Austin. Jamie is the executive director and Alex is the outreach advocate for Hope House. So, and I hope you listened to last week. If you didn't, go back and listen to last week's episode because we just started getting into one thing that was fascinating was the anger control wheel, right?
The power and control wheel,
yep. Which... you know, if you listen to that and start to go, oh, you'll get a better feel for what abuse is, mm-hmm. what it can look like.
And just to note, you can Google that too, the power and control wheel, and that will come up and you can see everything that we talked about too.
Okay. It strikes me too that, you know, I've done harassment training where I work at McFarland's, and one of the principles that I try to get people to understand right away with that is that harassment is not about doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's doing unto others as they would have you do unto them. So it seems to be part of the equation is to understand that when someone is feeling abused, it's not about whether or not the other person thinks they're abusing you. It's about you feeling abused or that you're interpreting it as an abuse. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment or am I missing a part of that in my understanding?
I think it's kind of, that's a parallel to what we talk about a lot is impact, not intent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if what you're doing is hurting me, maybe you should look at what you're doing, not give me a justification for why you're doing it.
Yeah, because that's a really easy thing to do, isn't it? To see, well, I just was doing that because that, or I mm-hmm. didn't mean it that way. And that's your fault for interpreting it that way, right? And then right away, it's into power and control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Is it not?
Yep, that's that minimizing and denying and blaming thing that we talked about.
Yeah. So the gut check then for the abuser mm-hmm. is to say, at some point, you have to say, it's not really important what I think I was doing. It's
what's the impact?
Okay. Yeah, so, and do you care about that impact or not? Which is, it strikes me that a lot of us think, well, that's your problem, not mine, mm-hmm. right? Which then enables you to keep going, right?
And that's the challenge, too. And that's, you know, I mentioned narcissism. And with a narcissist, which is often an element in abuse, the thing, a narcissist, you know, they think they're perfect, right? So there's no way for them. They're not, they lack empathy. That's like one of the key characteristics of a narcissist is they don't have the capacity to be empathetic. And B, they don't have the capacity to be retrospective or reflective. So they think that they do nothing wrong. So why would they change? Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And very often abusers, their intent is to hurt.
Yes.
But, in your scenario, just as people, how can we be better people is to reflect on the impact over the intent.
Sure. Well, and recognize, yeah, that, I mean, it's the same thing with me. I may think that someone intended something mm-hmm. and, you know, after talking with them, realize they didn't intend it that way. But the impact was still mm-hmm. that it angered me. It hurt me. It made me sad. It, you know, I felt disrespected. And if the other person doesn't recognize that, it's the old thing, it adds insult to injury, right, mm-hmm. by doing that.
That's also an opportunity, you know, to look at your own triggers, too. If you felt a certain way about something that someone did and you're able to have that open communication with that person and they say, well, I'm very sorry that it hurt you, but, you know, that my intention was this. And this is, you know, outside of an abusive type relationship is where I'm thinking here. But just to be able to look at, okay, why did that impact me that way then? You know, if this was something innocent, you know, maybe there's something there that I need to work through.
Sure. Is there a spectrum to abuse? Like, is bullying, I would think, is part of abuse, right? So are there terms that we use or that you use internally to kind of describe, you know, bad, worse, worst kind of thing in abusive relationships?
I mean, there definitely is a spectrum, but I would say that it's on an individual to determine where on that spectrum something lies, right? Like, I don't get to say, I think Alex was talking in your last episode about how for some people, the physical might be might be the worst. And for others, the emotional or the financial might be more impactful. So I don't get to say, well, she has, you know, X marks and that is the worst thing, where she might be saying it's the way he's made me feel about myself. It's how he's damaged my self-esteem and my ability to feel good about myself and my self-worth. So yeah, it definitely is a spectrum, but I guess, I couldn't say, because it's so individualized, yeah, where what is the most damaging on that spectrum.
I wouldn't even, I would almost not even put it on a linear spectrum. It would almost be like a circle, okay, because there's just so many different types. And like Jamie said, I'm always very careful not to make that determination or even use language that implies that someone's situation is worse than someone else's.
Sure. Mm-hmm. 'Cause
that's something that we do hear a lot too, is, you know, I know so many people have it so much worse, or I know he's not hitting me, so, you know, I know I'd feel stupid even saying this or coming to you guys with this, stuff like that.
Right.
So, and I'm always very, I always make sure I say, you know, just because, you know, someone else's situation might look different doesn't make your situation any less traumatic, and it doesn't make how you're feeling any less valid. Yeah, so.
You know, it makes me think of those, I forget what they call that kind of graph where the there's the points on the graph, like, and they go in all different, mm-hmm, what's it called?
A scatter plot.
A scatter plot, yeah. It makes me think of a scatter plot, and you can see, like, there are, tend to be, like, areas that locus together, but then there will be these outliers, mm-hmm, that, you know, and I would think there are outliers that something that wouldn't normally seem like it would be that big of a deal, maybe in a lot of people's perspective, is a huge deal,
yep,
for the person. And, you know, I think about that. We all have different backgrounds, right? Different upbringings, different experiences as we're growing up. So I know I've spent years in therapy, you know, trying to figure out why certain kinds of things really impact on, mm-hmm, me. And, it, you know, I can always trace it back to a series of learned behaviors and, you know, situations I was involved in that at that time really impacted, mm-hmm, you know, right? So you were talking about that actually before, Alex, about the studies that you're working on or working, mm-hmm, through with, mm-hmm, your doctorate, right? Mm-hmm. That there is the
trauma.
Yeah. Who is the professor or the
I was talking about Peter Levine, okay, and his work in somatics and trauma and how, you know, the body holds on to that trauma impact.
Right.
Imprint.
Sure. So is there, can we talk stats for a little bit just to get our heads around some of that? Yeah. What are some of the most salient statistics, realities of abuse in our area, nationally, globally? Can you speak to that? Am I asking too general of a question, or are there, like, these are the touchstones that we use to indicate?
We have lots of different stats. Okay. It depends on, you're talking about violent, financial, emotional. But yeah, I mean, roughly one in three women, and one in five men will be impacted by some sort of abuse, whether that be financial, emotional, or physical abuse, that they would characterize as abuse.
Okay.
And so it's a prevalent issue. And we see those numbers, right? We mm-hmm, provide thousands and thousands of bed stays each year. And we serve many hundreds of survivors each year. And so in the five counties we serve, we're seeing those stats come to life.
In the population, so if you're dealing with hundreds and the population is, what, maybe 150, 200,000 in those, mm-hmm, five counties total? So it's a pretty significant population.
Yeah, and we're not catching even the majority of them, yeah, right? I mean, right, we're just catching a fraction who know about us or feel safe enough to call,
yep,
us.
Right.
We're not catching anywhere near, you know,
the total. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So do there tend to be, like, certain areas, do you think, or conditions within geographically or economically that tend to make it more prevalent, or like, are urban areas more inclined than rural areas? Does it anything,
you know,
like that?
I think
that?
Access is different, but, mm-hmm, the data shows that the numbers are pretty consistent across, okay, the board, but certainly our access is going to be different. So someone who's living in a really rural community in Marquette or Adams County may have less access than someone who's living here in Sauk County, in Baraboo, for instance, or, mm-hmm, in the Dells nearby. So,
and when you're saying access, is it access to services?
Access to support, okay, access to information, all of that, you know, in, yeah, terms of, like, knowing about Hope House.
So, mm-hmm, you wouldn't even know you can't count it because you don't know what it is, essentially, or you can't include, yeah, it in the stats.
Yeah. Right? And, okay, I mean, we have ways that, you know, like law enforcement will let a survivor know about us, but that's, mm-hmm, that means that they have to call law enforcement to get that information. And that doesn't always happen. You know, you could find us on a quick Google search. But again, if you don't have access to the internet or don't, you know, if your phone is monitored, like there's a lot of factors there. So,
which is why our education team is so important. So we have a couple of youth advocates or a few youth advocates who go out into schools across the 5-county service area, and they talk about Hope House's services. They talk about what is sexual violence, what is domestic violence. Who could you call? Could you call Hope House? How do you get in touch with us? And how can you support people that you love if they disclose to you? So it doesn't have to be that they always come to us. It can be that we have this sort of little, forgive the analogy, but like little army of people in all of these communities who are advocating for survivors independent of Hope House.
Worker bees. They're worker bees. They're buzzing into these situations.
We need them, right? Yeah. Like we could not support everyone without them. We could not know that people are getting
Well, I mean, with the numbers you're talking about, we'd have to be spending as much as we spend on the military on this sort of mental health, you know, recovery and, you know, reaction.
Absolutely.
To be able to make the dent in it we need to make, right?
Yeah.
So without volunteers, boy, it's hopeless enough without not having the volunteers that care enough to do something. Yeah. I keep thinking, too, about, you know, the obstacles to getting help, the obstacles to even recognizing and confronting your own need for help. I mean, how do you break that down for someone that is being abused, is obviously, I mean, it's like, they couldn't be more obvious if they were walking around with their arm hanging and a bone sticking out. You know, you have a compound fracture. So, and yet they're still coping. So perhaps the fact that, well, I'm still getting by, he's not hitting me or she's not, you know, attacking me, whatever. Because we have a tendency to think about this as men against women, and that makes a lot of men go, I never, blah, blah. But it does go both ways. But by far, men are the greater culprits, are they not? I mean, okay. So it's not like, you know, guys can walk off scot-free on the whole thing, nor can they, you know.
Nobody gets a pass on this issue.
Abuse is abuse. It's not gender specific.
And you know, I think also a lot of the time it's hard because the way that men grow up in our society, you know, like you have to be a man, you can't show emotions, you can't do this, you can't do that, toxic masculinity, you know, quote unquote. I mean, that contributes hugely to this because A, that teaches men not how to deal with their emotions, you know, so they get buried, and then we don't know how to deal with them on the inside, so they come out explosively on the outside. And B, if a man is being abused in a relationship by a woman, like, that is a huge barrier because no, like, many men aren't going to want to admit that, you know, and they think that they can handle it, or they don't, they think it's a sign of weakness that, you know, if they need help, so. I think a big piece to kind of, overcoming that and kind of getting someone to, and again, like for me as an advocate in my position, I'm never going to push anybody one way or the other. I'm there to empower. I'm there to support no matter what decisions are made. But I think education is probably like the most important thing when it comes to getting someone to kind of realize where they're at. And I think that's one of the reasons that we do get survivors calling our hotline and just wanting to talk and to try to understand their own situation, because I mean, there's definitely people who don't realize things that they are being abused, you know? So when you just kind of talk about what abuse looks like, how many, you know, it could be this, this, and this, and then they sit there and you bring that to awareness, and then it's like, okay, I can't deny this anymore, you know?
So then someone can finally realize that they're in a toxic, abusive relationship. It strikes me, too, then it takes a tremendous amount of courage to confront it and believe that you can actually overcome it. Right. So the person that's at that phase where they just see the cards so stacked against them, how do you help them find that courage? Because they've got to have it, right? They've got to have the commitment to deal with the huge things that are going to come up as a result of finally confronting it.
So absolutely.
How do you educate? How do you prepare someone for that? Because it must be hard to convince them that, hey, those are all real concerns, but staying in is much, much worse than getting out.
Yeah, and I think all of our advocates, we work on an empowerment-based model. And so for us, it's you're right, like it's that courage, but it's also fear that sometimes motivates people to call in. But that courage is always present. Even if you're afraid, you have to have the courage to pick up the phone and do that. But our empowerment-based model really is what do you think is best and how can we support you? And that, yeah, that is what we see our role as. It's really not, hey, here's what you need to do. It's maybe informing them that we see them at real danger, mm-hmm. Okay. That we see lethality as a high risk factor for them at this point.
Yeah.
But ultimately they know their situation, the entirety of it. And it's our role just to support them through restraining order support, through a criminal justice, you know, process, or just through getting shelter or, finding a safe place for the night or safety planning for what happens safety if this planning. Happens again. I mean, yeah. Safety planning is number one, right?
It's huge. Right.
Do you know that you could call us back if that happens mm-hmm. again? Right. Do you know that even if you've called us 100 times before and weren't ready to leave, 101, we're here for you.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I guess maybe even just talking about all of the services that Hope House mm-hmm. offers would be important. So we do have a pretty robust team of advocates and a couple of bilingual advocates, Spanish-speaking advocates as well. Okay. And our advocates offer, obviously, that 24/7 hotline support. We have a shelter. We also offer victim advocacy for restraining order support, for criminal justice reports, and through the whole criminal justice process. So law enforcement reports all the way through a trial if one happens. Okay. And then we go to sexual assault nurse exams with victims, you know, regularly. So okay. If someone's experienced strangulation or physical abuse or sexual violence, there's a number of sexual assault nurse examiner programs in our area and in Madison, okay. And we'll accompany them there. And it really is about, we're here to be your kind of backup, to give you that emotional support, the resources and yep. the information so that you're not here alone having to remember all of this or navigate this by yourself. Sure. Let us back you up and be there for you through this whole process.
Sure.
So if you're not sure what you need, if you just need someone to talk to and say, it's okay, I'm here for you, call our helpline, and it's 608-356-7500. Or visit our website and get more information about all of our services. And like I said, we have the education and community outreach services as well. It's just, I can't say enough about our team. We're really, really lucky to have such a great team and so many sure. Programs.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Folks, I'm going to take another quick break and we're going to come back and talk about that. Let's get that phone number at least another half a dozen times if we need to. But I'm talking with Alex Austin and Jamie Safficism. We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our sponsors here on 99.7 Max FM. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back to wrap up this difficult but extremely important discussion here on Frame of Reference. If winter is getting the upper hand, fight back with Simplicity's most powerful single-stage snow throwers, featuring the Snow Shredder Serrated Auger. This powerful feature easily clears heavily compacted snow and ice, allowing you to clear snow faster compared with our other Simplicity single-stage snow blowers. Not to mention, now you can finally tackle tough and complicated end-of-driveway snow left behind the snowplow. McFarland's one block south of Highway 12 at 780 Carolina Street, where service is a family tradition. And we're back here at Frame of Reference. Guests are Jamie Safficism and Alex Austin. It's Alex and Jamie work with a wonderful organization in the Baraboo area that serves a 5-county radius. Is that right?
Yep.
So Hope House, which you can get to at their website, Hope House SCW for South Central Wisconsin, HopeHouseSCW.org. Phone number 608-356-7500. Make sure that you write those numbers down. We'll give them to you a couple more times, but, cause this, I suspect virtually everyone listening to this knows somebody who is being abused right now and they either don't know about it, they suspect it, but haven't had the courage themselves to ask about it or are involved in it and have been trying to deny it, whatever. What are the stages that someone goes through to recognize they're in abuse and they need to get out of it? Is there like a set kind of textbook thing there?
You know, I don't think so, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess I would say that there's going to be alarm bells that are going off, you know, internally. And those are maybe like the red flags that people talk about. A lot of the time we ignore them and deny them. But eventually there's going to come a point where you're going to sit, you might have, it might just be like, you know, a flash second of like, this isn't right. Because, you know, being in that situation is going to, you get just, it's almost like an indoctrination. Like you just get to the point where you're so used to it being this way. You think you deserve it. You know, you don't even know who you are. You can't make your own choices, all of these things. But then eventually there's going to be, you know, a flash thought of I deserve better than this. And I think that's probably what starts it. And then, I mean, you might start to disconnect a little bit, or you're going to start to see the different ways that you're that this person's being bad to you or treating you badly or being abusive. And you'll just start to see that more and more. And I think, like we've talked about before, the education piece is really helpful in that. You might see the ways that it's affecting your kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you nip it in the bud? I mean, is there, you know, say you're just dating someone, mm-hmm. and, you know, if you see certain things in the relationship, can you, are there warning flags there too, that before you're all emotionally attached and
Absolutely.
Whatnot, you know, do you do training for just, you know, young women, young men to say, okay, here's the warning signs. You know, when you see this, you're getting really infatuated with someone, blah, blah, blah. Here's the things you need to be, warning, Will Robinson, mm-hmm. warning, mm-hmm. right? Is there anything like that?
I don't think we offer anything like that, but.
No, we don't offer a training specifically for that, but I think it's what we can do as a society, as a community, is encourage women to listen to their own voice, right? And okay. to not second guess it or minimize those things.
Right, okay. right.
And if we build up women to, or anyone really, I shouldn't say women, I shouldn't make it a gender, but if we build up everyone really to listen to their own voice and trust in their own instincts and their own feelings and intuitions, that's a good starting place, right? Mm-hmm. And to have the confidence to know that if someone's not right for you, you can move on.
Right,
sure.
right.
Sure.
And that you deserve somebody who's going to treat you right.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The self-valuation component, you know, because mm-hmm. That it's like, I think sometimes that's don't think so much of yourself, right, a thing. It's just like, well, no, I think our problem really is more don't think so little of yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Which if we didn't have that as a pervasive element in our culture and nation, this probably wouldn't be as big a problem as it mm-hmm. is, right? Mm-hmm. And accountability. I mean, I think of that too, that, again, as a man, I'm going to call us men on the carpet here and say, I don't think men have been accountable for way too long and haven't been accountable in the right ways for behaving in a way that is appropriate, loving, kind, compassionate, empathetic. Mm-hmm. You know, as you were alluding to before, you know, men don't have a lot of emotional training. We tend to raise boys as being, well, when you feel this, you're angry. And when you feel this, you're angry. Mm-hmm. And when you feel this, you're angry. You know, and instead of learning all of the words that there are to describe our feelings and say, mm-hmm. well, no, what I really am is disappointed. Mm-hmm. What I really am is just frustrated. What I really am is sad and depressed about the situation. But it's coming out as anger because that's the only thing I can identify it as, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So, you know, just to give... my daughter says, I'm the gayest straight man you'll ever meet. Mm-hmm. When she introduces me to friends, I'm like, hey... I guess that's a compliment. Thank you. So, and I think of, I want more gay men, if that's what it means. You know, I want more gay men in our society, right? And then I have two gay brothers, and they're some of the most sensitive, empathetic people I know, right? And mm-hmm. So, how do we train that? I mean, do you do any of that kind of training for men to say, hey, these are the things you need to do a self-check on, or do you recommend agencies for men that are trying to recover from their own abusive tendencies?
Well, we don't do anything for any specific gender. We serve all genders, but we don't really work with batterers in that capacity.
Okay.
But there are batterers treatment programs in Madison. I would say that, you know, those treatment programs don't have the highest rate of success, but they do offer, you know, some support. And, you know, if someone feels like they're a good candidate for that, then they should explore that mm-hmm. for sure.
Or one-on-one therapy also.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I would note too, that I feel like we are headed in a good direction as far as that goes. We're kind of, as a society, going through a shift where it is becoming more accepted, you know, and men are being told that, you know, it's safe to feel your emotions. It's safe to have emotions. It's safe to express them. It's safe to right. communicate with your partner and with people who care about you.
Right.
So I think that we're headed in the right direction. There's definitely a lot of work to do there still. But yeah, I feel like the number one thing is if you are aware enough to recognize that you are, you know, you have these tendencies, definitely seek out therapy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I know that's helped me tremendously mm-hmm. just in dealing with my own trauma, you know, things that happened and, you know, be really easy to say. It's interesting because you were talking about the power and control mm-hmm. Circle. And I think there are tendencies for men to minimize for, you know, to try to, you know, deny their own things that are going on that are making them batterers.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of
it's not a big deal. I just get angry sometimes. You know, that's
that's what I've seen before, and that's how.
And it absolutely does stem from trauma. Yeah. Absolutely, 100%. Like they, you know, early childhood trauma is definitely like the biggest precursor to someone becoming an abuser, and it's. You know, the power and control wheel, it's all about control. So think about a child who's growing up in a violent household or a household where a parent's addicted to drugs or someone's incarcerated or something like that. You know, they might grow up trying to control everything and everyone around them because they never were able to have that safe, secure environment around them as a child.
Right. And for me, the important delineator there is it's not an excuse.
Correct.
It's an explanation. Mm-hmm. It's a criteria, perhaps, but to use it as an excuse.
As drugs and alcohol are not an excuse either, which I think is a big misconception. Like, oh, well, you know, he wouldn't do this if he wasn't drinking and stuff like that. Like, that's one thing that, you know, we always make sure to note that, you know, okay, the drugs and alcohol might lower inhibitions and there might be, you know, it might be a contributor, but it's not an excuse and it's not the reason that it's happening.
Right. So, Alex, you were saying when we were off before that you also had something about cycle of violence or some information there we should talk about?
Yeah, the cycle of violence is, so it's like a three-phase thing that kind of, it's a cycle that goes on in abusive relationships. And so it starts with the honeymoon phase, right? So you meet this person and they are going to, sometimes you hear it referred to as love bombing. And they're just going to charm the pants off of you. You know, they're going to buy you everything, tell you all of the things that you've always wanted to hear. They're going to just draw you in really quickly, you know, and make you just, you know, feel like the luckiest person in the world because this person loves you so much. After the honeymoon phase is the tension building phase. So this is where you start to get that feeling that you're walking on eggshells. Maybe there's little things that's making this person mad, you know, just small things. So you're trying to do everything perfectly to kind of make sure, you know, keep the peace. Maybe there's little spats about this or that, but you can feel that tension, you know. And eventually you get to the explosion phase, which is where something big happens. Maybe there's a physical altercation. Maybe there's just a really bad fight, argument. Maybe law enforcement's involved. There's, you know, a number of things that could happen. Maybe the victim leaves at this point. And after that, that's when the cycle starts over. So that's when the abuser is going to be saying, I'm so sorry. I just love you so much. It'll never happen again. I'll change. I'll do this. I'll do that. Buying flowers, buying chocolates, buying, you know, doing whatever, sending gifts, just doing all kinds of things to try to pull you back in. And a lot of the time it works. So then you're back in the honeymoon phase and things are okay for maybe a month or so. And then it moves on to that tension building phase again. So it's just a cycle over and over and over that is textbook for these types of relationships.
Okay. Jamie, what do you see as the, what are we missing? What have we not talked about in this? I'm putting you on the seat as executive director of the organization, but what, if there's one thing that people would take away from this podcast and this discussion, what is it?
Oh gosh, there's so many things floating in my head.
But what are the 18 things?
Would be that it can happen to anyone, and that there is no discrimination when it comes to violence, and it is happening to someone you know, whether you realize it or not.
And it's not just you're getting beaten. I mean,
everything, right? It can be emotional abuse, it can be financial abuse, it can be physical abuse, and it did not discriminate in any way.
And it may just be one or two of those things. It may be all of them.
Absolutely.
I mean, just, you know, don't limit it in your own head. If you're feeling abused, trust your feelings.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
And if we know that we all know someone, then if we're feeling that that may be happening to someone we care about, you know, the best things you can do is be an open support and encourage them and just say, you know, you can call me for any reason. No judgment. You know, no advice. I'm not looking to give you advice. I'm just looking to support. Someone discloses to you, you just say, how can I, thank you for sharing that with me. How can I support you?
Right.
What would you like to do? And how can I be helpful with that?
Sure.
And then back it up, be there for that person. Right.
Right.
And then like Alex was talking about, you know, prevention and education, we don't want to be doing this forever. I would love to be out of a job. I would mm-hmm. love for the next generation to never see this. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about these things with our kids. Let's communicate effectively and demonstrate for them what effective and open communication is, what boundary setting looks like you were talking about with anger. Let's say anger is a secondary emotion. You're saying you're angry, but what happened that made you angry? Oh, it sounds like you were embarrassed. Or it sounds like you felt dismissed or unheard. And let's label those things for our little kids and let them start to identify that so that they can identify what triggers that anger. Right. And then we can help them process that really effectively. So there's so much work to be done in all the different areas from prevention to response. But it really is about being open to supporting people and being open to supporting our children in feeling confident as they grow up and having that self-esteem to know that no one deserves this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And no one deserves for you to do this to them.
Right. It's interesting. I keep thinking of like business analogies and like the, you know, if you can name it, you can claim it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, a big thing. Right. And yet to me that, you know, okay, so you're wealthier if you get there, that whole thing and you're, but more importantly is if you can name the emotion, then you can claim the responsibility for doing something about mm-hmm. it. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we can have that sense of, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know what your intention was, but boy, that made me really feel disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean any disrespect. Okay. Well, help me understand this then. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nonverbal Absolutely. Stuff that's going on right there is adding to my conclusion that you were being disrespectful because you're disrespectful. Right. So do you do any of that kind of, or do you leave that to the counselors when you're talking with somebody and helping to bring them into, you know, okay, let's get you out of the situation. This is what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. What does that look like then? What should a person expect once they've said, okay, I'm getting out?
Oh, there's a lot of supportive counseling. If that's what, is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah. I mean, what does it look like? What should a person look to as like, you know, this is where you're going to go to. This is the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Once you make that courageous mm-hmm. step to get out.
So it can feel so overwhelming once you do make that decision. Okay. So, or even coming up to that. So there's a lot of conversations around different options. And that's kind of what my role is I'll lay out those options and I'll say, okay, which one, you know, feels right to you. And it's, we just take it one step at a time, you know, safety planning that like Jamie mentioned earlier is a big one. We're constantly talking about ways to keep ourselves safe. And that can be as simple as just talking through a plan if something happens. Consistently just reminding the survivor that, you know, they do have the strength and they are capable and they are worth it and that there is, you know, life on the other side of this. And I mean, I don't sugarcoat things. I will straight up tell them this is going to be hard, but you can do it. Right. And I'm going to be right here with you, you know. Right. And that, I guess, like for me, that would be the biggest takeaway that I would want people to remember from this is that they're, you know, you're not alone. Like we're here. Mm-hmm. There's so many people that are available for help. And if we can't help you with it, I'm going to find you somebody who can. We work with a lot of the community agencies. We partner with pretty much every agency in all of our counties. So if I can't help you, I bet you I can find someone who can.
Right. I think what I'm appreciating in this is that you're not directing people or telling this is what you have to mm-hmm. do, which is important. I think anyone that's listening and thinks that they have someone in their life that they need to counsel, but it's not about being directed. It's about being heard.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? I mean, imagine how empowering it is, though. Like, there's a difference between, especially as a victim or a survivor who's been told what to do for X amount of years and has been controlled and just had everything, you know, laid out for them. There's a huge difference between them coming to us and asking us what to do and me telling them, do A, B, and C, and you'll be fine. Between that and, you know, me saying, well, here's your options, A, B, and C. What do you want to do? What feels right for you? And then they do it. And it's just so, it's amazing to see the power of something like that, to see just something as simple. And I mean, it's not simple, so I don't mean to like downplay it, but something like filing a restraining order and going to court and facing your abuser and being able to testify to your statement and say, yeah, he did all of these things to me. You know, something like that can just be incredibly empowering. Is it scary? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But when you are done with that, it's just really powerful to watch the transformation that happens through a process like that.
You know, you talk to like war veterans and they'll tell you, yeah, being in a battle is absolutely one of the most terrifying things you can endure. But coming out victorious,
mm-hmm.
nothing like it.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And knowing that the people that were alongside you, that fought alongside you, you know, you're more loyal to them than to anybody else, right?
And in that, you know, even when it comes to the court process and restraining orders, you know, even if you don't win, it's about, and I always tell my clients this too, it's about more than that. You know, it's about setting that boundary and letting them know that you're done and that that behavior is not going to be accepted anymore and having your voice heard because, you know, you've been silenced for so long, and to be able to sit in a courtroom and tell people who have some authority that this is what happened to me. Yeah, it's really impactful.
So here's a question I like to wrap up to when we can, unless there's something I'm missing. So I don't want to shut down anything
Okay.
Imagine, I don't know, 10 years, however long, you know, you guys both continue in this or whatnot, or you just move on to something else. Is there a legacy? Is there a thing that you would like people to be able to look at, you know, your picture on the wall, Jamie, as a co-executive, or yours as an advocate, and be able to say, yeah, Jamie was really, I loved how she, or, you know, Alex always made me feel, the legacy, you know, the things we leave behind. So is there a mark that you hope you're making? And what does that mark look like?
Well, I guess my mark evolves with the role changes, right? Mm-hmm. So in my current role, I hope it's that my staff know, my team knows that they're a part of something bigger, and that people support them and appreciate the work they do. And when I was in an advocacy role and putting that hat on, I hope it's that people know that I believe survivors and I have their back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it really is, that's an interesting leadership quality too, is that desire to serve, mm-hmm. right? And to know that you are serving as and inspire, mm-hmm. right? And there's also that quality of, I know what it is to walk, you know, it's like in war, you know, the best commanders are the ones that have been in the foxholes, mm-hmm. right? So, Alex?
I feel like, for me, it would be just, I would want people to feel like I was a safe space for them. Like I was someone that they could come to without any fear of judgment. And that, you know, they knew that they could always rely on me. And that, support and empower.
Support and empower.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's a great thing to think about. Support and empower. Support and empower. Maybe that can be our mantra, right, going forward, and that you can use when you're talking or dealing with anyone that you suspect, or if you are yourself, are feeling like this resonates with you in some way, right? So my guests today have been Alex Austin, the advocacy outreach advocate for Opaus, and Jamie Sapphicism. Sapphicism.
Oh. It's just getting worse.
It's just, you know, it's like I've got this like mental barrier to saying Sapphicism. So Sapphicism. I give it up. I'm sorry, folks. I am a failure completely. Do not give me any names. I will not have any more guests on my show with more than three syllables in their names. So, Jamie, thank you so much. The co-executive director of Opaus as well. Again, that information, if you need to help someone, support someone, empower someone, or you yourself need to be hopeful and empower yourself, please call their hotline, 608-356-7500.
7500, yep.
7500, and it's 24/7. There will always be someone there to answer the call.
Yep. Okay. Any language, we use Language Line, or we have Spanish-speaking employees, feel free to call for any need.
Okay. Please tell everyone, and you can also go to their website at hopehousescw.org and get more ideas and information about the services that they have. Jamie, Alex, thank you again. So now I'm going to put names together. This is great. So thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having
us. We'll be right back here at WRPQ 99.7 Max FM and Frame of Reference to wrap up this week's episode.
There's never been a better time to support small businesses and save big with Max FM Big Deals. Discount certificates from the Max FM Big Deals store will save you up to 50% off retail every day of the week. Local restaurants and wineries, healthy living and spa services, gifts for the holidays, and a whole lot more. New deals are added weekly. Check it out now at MaxFMBigDeals.com. That's MaxFMBigDeals.com. Start shopping and start saving.
Well, that wraps up our two-part interview with Jamie Sathasabam and Alex Austin at Hope House. I want to finish this series by making a plea to our listeners to do whatever you can to help end this problem that tears apart our communities and our homes. If you know someone or suspect you know someone caught in an abusive situation, point them towards the resources that can help get them out. Edmund Burke, the 18th century philosopher, summed up our collective responsibility to one another when he said, "Nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could only do a little." Do a little, and it will help a lot. As we move further and further into this new year, let's work together to gather the momentum we need to counter these things that are working to tear us apart. Things like domestic abuse hide in the shadows. The abusers don't have the courage to come out in the open and admit what they're doing, and they keep their prey under a tight leash. So it's up to us to shine some light inside, even if it's just a tiny candle. Join us next week as we continue our New Year's resolution podcasts as I talk with trauma recovery expert Kathy Linz. We're going to keep probing tough topics for the next few weeks and see if we can't move the needle towards a healthier world, little by little. Hope you can join us. Stay well.